Hi, I'm Dave King.
And I'm Alicia Reid. Welcome to Rotary Unscripted, the monthly podcast from Rotary Great Britain in Ireland. And Dave, happy podiversary.
Happy podiversary.
Can you believe this is the first anniversary of Rotary Unscripted and somehow we've survived a whole year of Dave's puns? And we're not cancelled yet.
And without your lights as well. You normally bring in lights,
yes,
on these occasions.
I will at Christmas.
Anyway, over the past 12 months, we've spoken to Rotary leaders, aid workers, campaigners, journalists, doctors and volunteers from across the world. We've travelled from Westminster to Taiwan, from food banks in South Wales to anti-slavery projects in Vietnam. And we've discovered some remarkable stories along the way. So if you've missed any of these conversations, you can catch up wherever you're listening to this podcast online.
And I have to say, I've learned so much in this last year about Rotary, so much I didn't know. It's been an incredible privilege, met so many amazing people. It's fantastic. So once again, we're back here in the studios of Swindon 105.5, where the microphones are live. And I'm pleased to say, from a technical point of view, the coffee is not too close to the mixing desk.
So this month's programme has something of a historical flavour. We're recording in Swindon, home to the famous Magic Roundabout, a Wiltshire town with a remarkable Rotary story of its own, as its oldest club celebrates a very special anniversary. We'll also be exploring leadership, literacy, volunteering, and the importance of communities that continue to look after one another.
Coming up, Dave will be talking to Amanda Watkin. Yes, we are welcoming our very own Chief Executive of Rotary Great Britain and Ireland to the studio. And they'll be talking about the changing face of Rotary and what the future holds. And then I'll be chatting to Debbie Vincent, President of Swindon Rotary Club, which this year celebrates 100 years of service. Then we'll look back at the club's remarkable history, discover why it's still thriving today, and hear about some of the projects that have changed the lives across Wiltshire.
Then we'll be bringing two Rotarians together with a shared passion for books. Becky Turner from Kings Hill Rotary Club in Kent has created the Rotary Great Britain and Ireland Book Club and now shares her love of reading with regular articles in Rotary Magazine, while playwright Joan Greening from the Elthorn Hillingley Rotary Club in Northwest London has spent many years encouraging young people to discover the joy of reading alongside a distinguished career writing for stage and screen.
And finally, we'll bring all four guests together to reflect on Rotary's role in our communities and, before we finish, ask each one of them to recommend one book they think every Rotarian should read. Whatever your Rotary passion is, whether it's in community service, education, safeguarding, literature, or simply making a difference where you live, please stay with us.
Our first guest has helped provide continuity for Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland for more than a decade. Wow. Amanda Watkin became Chief Executive of Rotary Great Britain and Ireland in 2013 and leads the Rotary Support Centre, working alongside successive volunteer leaders to support Rotary clubs across England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, the Channel Islands and even Gibraltar. She's overseen a period of considerable change. Rotary has embraced new technology, navigated the challenge of the COVID pandemic and adapted the way it communicates with members, and it continues to evolve as it looks towards the future. Amanda, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. It's Rotary royalty. I'm really pleased to have you here. Let's turn the clock back, though, to 2013. How different is Rotary today from the organisation you inherited?
Before I probably answer that question fully, I think what I'd like to say is that every leader that I've worked with has brought their own style and passion and dedication to Rotary. So though, although the organisation itself has shape-shifted, that real honesty and passion for being in a senior leadership role has not changed.
Sure.
But yeah, Rotary has, and Rotary needs to, because it needed to become relevant to the world in which we are presenting ourselves. So yeah, when I came through, it was very much, you know, the president of the day, and we were in the governing council chamber, so a big wooden panelled room where everybody came together, and there was a top table with the president, the secretary, the president-elect, so very, very traditional in its format. But yeah, lots of conversation. People just wanted the best for Rotary, but it wasn't necessarily delivering in terms of relevance to the outside world.
Actually, the question I've always wanted to ask is, why Ulster? So Rotary Support Centre is in Ulster in Warwickshire, near Stratford-upon-Avon. It's a rather unusual place to choose. Why Ulster?
I think it's really something quite as simple as someone saw a good deal. So, we had been based in London, and so we moved out of London. And so the cash, I guess, that came from that opportunity, the leaders of the day, back in 1986, this was when we first moved into Ulster, they wanted somewhere that was more central. And of course it is. It's smack bang in the middle of the country, but the communication and logistical sort of transport networks are pretty rubbish. But the building and the environment is just beautiful.
It's a lovely place to be.
Yeah, it's an old council building.
Is it?
Yeah, town council.
Because you can see there's a traditional chamber, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Sort of wooden paneled chamber there. Yeah, and that's obviously where the council sat at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, one of our team members, Louise, she remembers very much that as a town council building as a child. You know, people used to go there and register their marriages. So it's been a part of that, the heart of the community for many years.
We have this term Rotary Support Centre. Let's just explain, what is the Rotary Support Centre? Who are some of the characters who inhabit that building?
Okay, we've got 21 staff down there. And so we have the joy of looking after the Rotarians across Great Britain and Ireland. So 30,000 Rotarians and just under 1,500 different Rotary clubs. And of course, our new membership channel of direct membership. And of course, you're both very familiar with that.
We are indeed.
So we look after people as opposed to clubs. Of course, we think about the governance of the clubs, but our staff team there are brilliant. So they cover everything from the Rotary Foundation and how do I make my donation? How do I get recognition? Right the way through to, I've got a constitutional query. What do I do? So those sort of more governance flavored questions. And then we have the fun stuff, which is the communications and the digital creativity, creative designer. We have comms team there, general member services. So you name it, it all happens there, but with the sole purpose of delivering customer excellence.
Sure. And what does a typical week look like for you?
You never know what's going to arrive through the door. So my inbox is always laden with all sorts of inquiries, and I've got a marvellous executive assistant who now tries to bat some of that stuff off for me. But a typical week would be sort of, what events are coming up? What activities are we seeking to get across the line? So we've had the district governors all come in, and we looked after 24 of those from across the region, had a big meeting with them. We do all of the learning and development planning and delivery, some of it from the building, some of it external. So we've got external event management. And then you just don't know what's coming on the fly. So there could be stuff that's coming for stories that are going to go out in the digital magazine.
Yeah.
It could be just inquiries. And of course, the senior management team are working consistently to meet the objectives for the board of Rotary International in Great Britain and Ireland. So that, of course, is about membership development and excellence in member experience.
You began your Rotary journey with the Rotary Club of Hitchin Tile House.
I did, yes, my favourite.
In 2002.
Yep.
How did that happen?
Someone just knocked on my door. Okay, it was as simple as that. So I had a business in the town, in Hitchin, and the town centre manager, he came by and he knocked on the door. He said, hey, we're having a bit of a get together of people that think they might want to do something for the community in Hitchin. And I thought, oh, that's a nice thing to do. No mention of Rotary. So we just pitched up at the local hotel, met with a load of really lovely people, and we decided we'd do some stuff. And that was it. And then eventually the word Rotary rolled across the table. And we went, oh, yes, okay, here's the subs and off we go. So that was it, really. It was as simple as someone coming and asking. That's what got me in. I had no idea about Rotary prior to that.
And at the time, I know you've had a variety of careers. You've worked in education and general business. But where was Rotary on the map for you at that time?
It was nowhere, I'll be really honest with you. So I hadn't come across Rotary when it came across me, which I'm so grateful for. My sort of background in technology, I was out doing all sorts of stuff in the North Sea on oil platforms and you name it, looking at Pirelli tyres and GKN pallets and all sorts of stuff. And so Rotary was nowhere near my world of work. Mm. But when I sort of, I guess, shifted shape a little bit and I set up a local business in the town centre, that's when it started to become more apparent, because I was part of that community and therefore able to engage, and the community was able to engage with me, and that's how it arrived.
If we look over the last sort of, was it 13 years, what do you think has been some of the biggest achievements over in that time?
Yeah, I think some of the real big achievements have been the creation of the board. So changing the way in which we govern and support our Rotary members. It's very difficult in the scenario that we had to start off with, which is where we had 31 people who were the governing body of the organisation. And of those 31, 26 every year changed. You just can't get continuity from that. Now we have solid continuity. The board's very young in its formation. It only formed in 2022. But already, from my perspective, I've got greater continuity of leadership, greater opportunity for projects to go from start to finish rather than start and change. I think that's been the biggest achievement for the organisation, and it took some doing, and hats off to the leaders that actually took us down that pathway.
Do you ever think there's an issue? And we were talking with Tom Gump, actually, in membership, where he was saying one of the issues with Rotary is that you're only there for 1 year. And, I mean, we'll talk to Debbie, because this is your second time, I think, as president, isn't it? So, actually, I'll ask you in a second on that. But first, Amanda, do you think, actually, that presidents and club officers should serve longer?
Yeah, I think the president is the one role that's actually the 1 year role. So your secretary and treasurer are there for longer. You've got that continuity. But I think that it's quite hard for a president to work in the continuum when they have only a 12 month period. I think, yes, a longer term would be better for everybody. But of course, the challenges that come with that are the perception and in some cases the reality of the volunteer workload.
Sure.
But I think, yeah, having a little bit greater continuity would be the way forward. Same with district governors as well.
Yeah. Debbie, how would you fancy a 2 year term as president of Swindon Rotary Club?
Well, we've always said that 2 years probably would be better than one, because you just get into the swing of things and then you're leaving that role. But in fairness, it's not easy to always fill these roles, and people find it hard to give 1 year, let alone two. So I don't know whether that will be the way going forward or not. I can't say on that, really. But I'm very proud to be our first president in 100 years to be president twice. Wow. And to me, that's a great honour. And also, I know my first year was hampered because of COVID.
Right.
Because I was president through the COVID years. But we did all do our bit from clubs all within Swindon, because we went to the STEAM and we did the vaccination. Yeah. Centre, we did all that for all the time that we were needed.
COVID actually was a really good demonstration of the power of Rotary, wasn't it? We saw an immense amount of volunteering there. I mean, nationally, I think something like 12 million people volunteered generally during COVID. Rotary clubs really shone during that period.
And we saw them mobilise overnight.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I'm super proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, Debbie just described what happened here in Swindon, and it was happening up and down the country. And in fact, we were part of the emergency partnership for the voluntary and community sector emergency partnership. And Rotary was recognised right from the get-go in that. And so bringing those additional volunteers and pairs of hands into each community made a massive difference.
Let's finally talk membership. Clearly, without gilding the lily, that's one of the big challenges that faces. I'm sure it's top of your priority list.
It is.
Where are we?
Okay, so we turned the numbers for the start of January. And yes, of course, we have seen a decline. So we were, in terms of billing, we were at 30,366.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we're just shy of our budget figure. So nothing to be worrying about there, the Honorary Treasurer tells me. So that's really good news. But of course, we want to do better. But what I will say is that it shouldn't be forgotten. Last Rotary year, we onboarded just literally shy of 4,000 new people.
Right.
So, you know, in any business, if you said, right, I've got 12-13% new customer growth rate, you'd be pretty chuffed with that. Our biggest problem is attrition. So the rate at which we lose our members. Some of that through ill health and unfortunately passing to higher service.
Sure.
And some of the other reasons which I think we can address. So where people perhaps are not so comfortable in the Rotary environment that they're experiencing, we have alternative solutions for them. So there shouldn't be so much attrition going forward, but it takes a while for that culture to shift and that understanding to be really taken on board. But yeah, the board, it is its number one priority.
Of course.
Without a doubt.
Our next guest is leading one of Rotary's landmark anniversary. This year, Swindon Rotary Club celebrates its centenary, marking 100 years of service to the local community. And to commemorate the occasion, the club has published a remarkable book called The Story of Rotary Club of Swindon, 1926 to 2026, edited by club member Steve Brain, and it charts the club's history from its formation in the aftermath of World War I right through to the present day. So the club was founded in 1926 when Swindon was still dominated by the Great Western Railway Works, and the club has grown alongside the town itself, supporting countless charities and community projects all over the past century. So we are so happy to meet its president, Debbie Vincent, who's leading the club during this very special year. Debbie, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Thank you very much indeed. Nice to be with you all.
It's wonderful that you could pop down the road to see us here. And we love coming to Swindon every month to do the podcast. So it's lovely to meet the president of the Rotary Club here. So very few Rotarians have the opportunity to serve during this centennial year. So what does it mean to you, Debbie?
Like I said a bit earlier, I'm really honoured to have this opportunity to lead our club again. As everything I had planned in our year for COVID didn't materialise. We did manage to keep the club together, and each day, to be fair, each week we met every week, and sometimes we had more people on the Zoom meetings than we did that actually came for the lunch. But it was fantastic. It's just a wonderful club to belong to.
So the plans that you had the first time around through COVID, have you managed to bring any of them to fruition this time?
Yes, I certainly have. In September, 14 of us are going over to the Somme, and we're going to do the battlefields and just have a camaraderie get together for 5 days. So looking forward to that very much. And we've got lots of things planned throughout the year. And most of all, though, I want our club members to remember it as a happy year for them, and not always thinking about what's going to happen the next year, because what we do now is the memories that we need for this year.
Yes.
And that's very important to myself and for our members, I know. And one of our most things is one of our members is being 100 in our 100th year.
Oh, wow.
So that is absolutely amazing, and still a very active member.
You've got so many firsts and unique
yes.
moments in your club, haven't you? So what are you particularly the most excited about in your year now?
Making a difference to the charities we've always supported. But we've got a wonderful dinner coming up, celebrating our centenary on the 21st of November. So very much looking forward to that, and meeting people from past and present that's moved on from many years and we've not seen for many years. So them all coming back up will be fantastic.
Then we have to talk about your charity balls, because they are epically successful. I mean, 1 million you've raised through this. Please tell us about how you do that.
We couldn't do it without the people of Swindon. I've got to be honest, their generosity is outstanding. And the support from our committee, we have 1 month off every year. We have July off, and then we start again for our next year. We all got our individual departments that we look after with the ball, but it's the surprise element, I think, of the ball that keeps it alive. We have a different theme every year. And one of our local jewellers, am I allowed to name it?
Of course you can.
Richard Deacons, Deacons in Old Town. He donates a wonderful £4,000 for us every year to auction. And this is always a big, big drive.
Doesn't that just show the value of that community? And it's the people around you, isn't it? And that relationship that you have with your local communities. It's
amazing. And we get our local charities to write in each year to say what they want money for. And that's what we aim to do. We all look at it and see, well, what can we do this year? And we set ourselves a target. Every year we've not disappointed.
I think that's a really important thing you said there about setting a target. It's having that goal, isn't it? Not just seeing how things go, but you seem to have a definite plan.
We do, but we've got a wonderful committee which is very, very strong. And they're not all Rotarians. We're trying desperately to get them in to be Rotarians, but they are friends of Rotary. And I think friends of Rotary are very, very important, as well as being a Rotarian, because they do a tremendous lot of work, especially in our club.
So you have a lot of engagement with people who are not Rotarians, but they're helping to lead the direction of your club.
Absolutely. They're very good at it. They give so much.
I was surprised when you said you have July off. I've not heard of that before.
I mean, the committee on the charity ball has.
Okay, they have July off. And I think that's probably important, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Have a lie down, which you probably need after all the planning and the achievements that you have going on.
You should come along 1 year to our charity ball. They're a great event.
That sounds like an invitation.
I have been to one.
You have
been to a couple, yeah. They are splendid occasions. Mr. Deacon is an amazing, very generous man. In fact, actually, if I just chime in this year, you raised for a very special cause, didn't you? Society Without Abuse, which used to be the Swindon
Women's
Aid Group. Amazing group. Nikki Aubrey, who is one of your
members.
And she was my first mentor.
Yes,
in Rotary.
That's wonderful, because you were a member of our group.
I was, until I got kicked out. No, not really.
Yeah. But until you left us for far away past.
Nikki, who will be a guest on our programme very soon,
yes.
But if you can perhaps talk more about why. Why did you connect with that such amazing charity?
We've been involved with Swindon Women's Aid since 1979, and very passionate to me. It's one of my, it's my go-to charity, if you like. What we did in our centenary year, we decided that we would have one charity, and that was because of back in 1989 when Molly Tanner and Mike Borden, they did raise funds for Great Ormond Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a success, they thought, why don't we do it on a yearly basis, which we've done. So we said, no, we'll have one charity. We asked people to send in a project that they wanted money raised for. And seven people applied. They had to come and give a presentation, and our club was then get everybody had a vote, and survivors won, not survivors, Society Without Abuse
mm-hmm.
won.
Yeah,
Survivors, sorry, is a shop that's run for Society Without Abuse.
Right, and so it's amazing that you had so many people wanting to come to you. And to me, that speaks about the impact that you have on in the community and how you're an absolute part of Swindon and its lifestyle.
Oh, I think we definitely are. We're not the only club in Swindon, but we all work together to a degree, but this is the charity ball is our baby.
On the subject of the community, you have a great history of helping the Great Western Hospital, and you raised enough money for a new linear accelerator for its radiotherapy unit. Can you tell us what that is and how you went about it?
The radiotherapy. Yes, we had that, the radiotherapy of Peel, and it was the biggest donation through foundation in Great Britain. And again, a lot of that money was raised from the charity ball. We were then able to multiply it by the foundation, and we did. And again, that was done through all the Rotary clubs in Swindon. We led it. And Howard Small, yes, he started it years ago. Rotary Club of Swindon led it, and it was great.
And just thinking back to one of our previous podcasts where we were talking about the foundation and how it's amazing how even a small idea in a club can build. And in your case, £175,000 mm-hmm. was it that you were able to boost the fund from foundation?
It was. It was just phenomenal. It went beyond our wildest dreams, to be fair. The charity ball set the mark to start it off, and then they just came and did all the work, and yes, it was just fantastic.
That focus is amazing, and looking at the book that you have here, it's incredible how many different areas of interest and help that you've given in the local community. So would you say that's the secret to your success, being open to lots of different ideas from all the different presidents along the years?
Oh, I think so, because I've been inspired by Mike Hillier, who's reaching his 100th birthday. And what got me so involved was back in 1989, within 5 days of a disaster in Italy, he took three caravans along with 10 people and delivered these over the border within 5 days. And to me, that it was just an amazing achievement. And I thought, if one man can do that in 5 days, if there's lots of us, we can do lots of things. So, yeah, he's a great inspiration to me.
And how did you get started in Rotary?
Tim Mason. Although Jan was a member for 2 years, then we went to Degerfors in Sweden on a football exchange. And Tim was just setting up the e-club. And he said to me, Debbie, why have you never joined Rotary? You come along with Jan and different people. And I said, because no one's asked me.
Right.
Yes. And he said, well, I'm asking you now. And that's how I became a Rotarian. And I love it. It's a huge family and one I'm very proud to belong to.
And that's another lesson for us as well. And I keep hearing this, that people became Rotarians because somebody simply asked them. That's the case with myself and with Amanda. You were saying that earlier. So Dave, you describe yourself as having your arm twisted.
I was. I was editor of the evening paper in Swindon at the time, and we covered a lot of Rotary events in Swindon, including the aforementioned ball. And yeah, Nikki Aubrey, who we've mentioned before, was a friend of mine, and she said, come along to Rotary. I went to the King's Arms, enjoyed the food, and the rest is history.
There you go. So looking back is what we've done at the Rotary Club of Swindon. So for you, what do you see looking forward? What would you like to see?
I'd love to see the Rotary Clubs in Swindon working together much more. I would love to see them, because at the moment numbers are lower, I would love it to become Rotary in Swindon and not members of 4 different Rotary Clubs.
Right.
Because I'm a great believer, numbers, you get more done. You'll always have the same few doing it, but those few are greater if there's more clubs together. And I would love to see a sign in Swindon. I've tried for years to get a sign. Rotary welcomes you to Swindon. That's what I would love to see.
What about a Rotary roundel on each of the magic roundabouts?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that idea.
Yes. Wonderful.
So I'm with you. I want it for Redditch as well. I want to see the Rotary welcomes you to Redditch. So same for us everywhere. Maybe we should have a bit of a campaign.
And oh, most definitely.
Advocacy. Let's go do it.
Rotary roundabouts. Yeah. I like the idea. Thinking about asking people to join Rotary, what would you like to say to your community?
I would like to say, come along, see what we do, see what you can offer us and what we can offer you. One thing you won't be disappointed in is the welcome that you will get.
Debbie, thank you very much for that. Stay with us, because there's going to be some literary involvement shortly. Because listening to that conversation, in fact, listening to both conversations there, one word that comes back is education. Helping young people recognise healthy relationships isn't just about preventing harm today, it's about shaping stronger communities for tomorrow. Education comes in many forms, of course. Sometimes it's through conversations in the classroom, sometimes it's through life experience, and sometimes it's through something much simpler.
Possibilities are all around us. We see potential in unexpected places. And when we share our knowledge, vision and connections, we turn great ideas into action. Together, we can make real change happen. We're Rotary. We are people of action. Get involved today at rotary.org/action.
Our next conversation brings together two Rotarians who've dedicated countless hours to encouraging people to discover the pleasure of reading. Becky Turner is a member of the Kings Hill Rotary Club in Kent and founder of the Rotary GB&I Book Club, which introduces Rotarians across the country to new authors and new ideas. And if you're thinking that her name sounds familiar, she writes regularly for Rotary magazine. More recently, she's also become a familiar voice on Rotary Radio UK.
And joining Becky is Joan Greening from another of my former Rotary clubs, Elthorn Hillingdon Rotary Club in West London, or Middlesex in Old Money. Joan is an award-winning playwright whose work has appeared in theatres across the country and at the Edinburgh Festival. She's also written for television too, and alongside her writing, Joan has spent many years helping young people to discover the joy of reading through schools, while also helping to run a book club at Elthorn Headingdon. Becky and Joan, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
So, we've all got that one book which hooked us, and I'd like to invite our listeners, actually, to have a think about what yours was in childhood or perhaps in your adult life. There's the classics, of course, like The Famous Five or The Hobbit or Jane Eyre or even a Beano. And I'm guessing, Dave, for you, was that a football annual?
Probably Wizard and Chips.
I knew there'd be something. Thinking back as a child, I think any book is a great book.
But what was your book?
I used to get excited about Case Catalogue and Argos Catalogue, you know. Okay. Honestly, I mean, it was just so exciting. I mean, it's the whole thing of...
Aren't you convincing?
Oh, I just absolutely loved it. Besides the ballet books, of course. But I would like to start with a question for both of you, Becky and Joan. What was the book that first made you fall in love with reading?
Joan first.
I think it was a book when I was very young called The Green Orchard, and it was all about animals, and I'm a great lover of animals, and I think that book really hooked me, and I've been reading ever since.
And Becky?
I think for me it would have been the series, the Enid Blyton books, The Faraway Tree, you know, The Wishing Chair, that sort of thing. It was lovely to go and watch the film The Faraway Tree recently as well. Mm-hmm. Something quite magical to look back to.
Debbie and Amanda listening in there, what was the first book that inspired you to enjoy reading?
You want to go first?
No. But Eden Blyton, what you just said, The Wishing Chair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think for me it was Of Mice and Men when I was at school.
Okay. Yeah. Was that your O level?
No, I never did it. Well, I did English language, but I didn't go to literature, you know, more the sciences. But Mice and Men really resonated.
What about you, Dave?
So, to be fair, as a journalist, I used to read lots of newspapers and magazines, and so I enjoyed... There's a guy called Mitch Albom, who's an American author, and writes some really good stuff there. So that was it there. Because for me, it was more about exploring the language, not only storytelling, but seeing the language and how you can make language just resound and tell so much with a story. So, Becky, let's just come to you there. Your love of books, I guess, has led to something quite special. Let's talk about the Rotary Great Britain and Ireland Book Club. How did it come about?
It came about from a question that you put in your editor's column, just asking if there were any Rotary clubs with book clubs out there. And so I got in touch, and you know how things work with Rotary, sort of said, okay, I can share our Kings Hill Rotary Club reading list with you, because I set up a Rotary Club, a local book club in our Rotary Club back in 2013, which has gone from strength to strength. And we now have quite a reading list. And we've all learned lots of lessons along the way. The book club has evolved. So when you put out that that request for information, I thought, well, you know, there is... So some things that we've gained from experience that I can help with, and one thing led to another, and I ended up running it, you know, very much in the way that that Rotary works. So my book club journey itself started about 15 odd years ago. Being in a book club was never something that I'd considered before. I hadn't particularly, and I do apologise in advance to any English teachers here, and to Joan as well, who's far more qualified than I am in this respect. I'd never really enjoyed books at school. The fact that you had to sort of look at them in such detail and think about what individual sentences meant and everything, I just couldn't engage with that. So I always thought that book clubs were something similar to that, where I get a long list of homework questions or something like that, and I'd actually have to do something that I didn't particularly enjoy. And it wasn't until a friend said to me, you enjoy reading, you know, we were talking about the books that we were both reading. I'm a member of a book club at a local library. I think you might enjoy it. Would you like to come? That I thought, well, okay, well, I'll give it a go. And it just exploded everything open for me. It was the most wonderful thing. And then after our Rotary Club had been going for a few years, as we charted back in 2010. Again, a similar conversation happened with my fellow Rotarians. There were a number of us who enjoyed reading, and I thought, well, maybe this is something that we could do within our Rotary Club as well. And like I said, that was back in 2013, and it has become a much loved part of the social fabric of our club. It's something we do monthly, and it's really, really very much enjoyed. So when the opportunity came through, you know, when you put this request for information out and we talked about it a couple of times, it was clear that there was a way to get what I call the magic of the book club. And I really do believe it's such a very special thing to be part of, out to a much wider audience, something that would give people an opportunity. If you've got there's a spectrum of participation you can have in the magazine book club. At its very simplest level, you could be reading the magazine on your own. You could read our book and just send me through some feedback. But it can be much more than that as well. It can be something that Rotary clubs with their own book clubs can read the book and give me their feedback. So again, much richer feedback from many, many more people. Or it's the perfect springboard for a Rotary club with a few keen readers to actually explore setting up their own book group. So it's a really, really exciting thing. We've been going about 2.5 years now, and there's some really exciting stuff on the horizon for us too.
And has it changed your reading habits? Now, because of the book clubs, has it changed the books that you choose, the way you read? I mean, how many books do you have? Sorry, multiple questions here. How many books do you have on the go at one time?
I only ever read one at a time. I know there are other people who may have three on the go at a time, but I like to really concentrate on what I'm reading, because I think I might lose the detail if I sort of switch between the two. In the magazine book club, we're now on our 10th book. I've just reported back on our 10th book in the July article. And in our Kings Hill book group, we have read over 100 books over the years.
Wow.
So it's really, really added up. And the question that you asked about, does it change how you read? Absolutely it does. But it's in a very gentle way. It's in a gentle way where you do it yourself. There's nobody saying, oh, here's a long list of questions and you must do this homework. It's as you're part of a discussion and you read the feedback, it does change the way that you read. It makes you start thinking about, was the author making a point there? Do I agree with the author's point? What is this book really about? Which is often very, very different to perhaps the strap lines on the cover and that sort of thing. It challenges you to reflect on your views, on your own views. Like I said, nobody is doing that to yourself. But you will find it naturally comes. And I think Under the Hornbeams by Emma Tarlow, which I summed up in the July article, is a brilliant example of this. It really challenges you to say, okay, well, you know, what do you understand by homelessness? For those who haven't yet read it, and I would encourage you to do so, Professor Emma Tarlow lives close to Regent's Park, and the book is set in COVID lockdown time. She spends a lot of time in the park, and she gets to know two men who are actually living in the park. It is a remarkable true story, and one that touches us on many, many different levels. So yes, there's that. And there's also the fact that it is literally a voyage of discovery. Being part of a book club, you will read books that you would never, ever have thought of opening, and maybe find new authors, new favourites, new genres.
And Joan, if I can bring you in here, whilst Becky was busy building a national book club, you were helping to run one much closer to home at Elthorn Hillingdon. Can you tell us a little bit about your book club?
Yes, well, we have had a very, very vibrant president who is in her second year now, which actually connects with what you were talking about earlier. But she said she would stay on for another year. And she wanted lots of new ideas. She wanted to shake us up. We're a very staid club, as Dave will tell you, I'm sure. She wanted whatever we did had to be community-based and membership-based. And she said, you know, ideas. And I think it was me that said, well, why don't we have a book club? And I mean, I've always wanted to have a book club because, you know, my most successful play is about a book club, and I've never been to one in my life. And this play's done all over the world. And I think I was getting a bit of guilt, you know, that I'd never been to a book club, but the play really sold well. So I think I did suggest it, that we had a book club. And she said, well, it has to be community. So we put it out each month on Eventbrite. And we have had, through that book club, now we've got two new members through it and two more in the offing. So people came in, and we're always very welcoming as a club, and they've enjoyed what we do. And yeah, we will have had four new members from the book club. But everything we do now, we try to do for community. So we're not just ourselves. We always invite other people in. And it seems to be working, because I think since Randy took over last year, I think we've had 10 new members now. I mean, we've lost a couple, obviously. Afraid that happens, but we're doing pretty well. The club feels completely different now. It's feels as though it's thriving, it's vital, and it's actually very exciting to be part, being a really older member, but it's wonderful to see younger members coming in. And yes, we are revitalized, I would say. I do think sometimes it is down to getting a younger president that's full of ideas and shakes you up. So she's done a wonderful job for us, Randy.
That's a wonderful thing, that it's the younger members that have helped to drive the direction of your club. And I'm intrigued to know, is the book club anything like the one that you wrote about in your play?
No. Great question. No, theirs is much smaller and more gossipy. Ours, we concentrate on the book. So, no. Concentrate on the gossip of the village. No, we concentrate on the books that we read. Everyone gives us ideas if anyone's read a book or they think we'd like it. So it's not one person choosing. We all choose books. And we've read a great variety in our year. So it's been a really good experience, I think, for the club. And last month, we actually had an author along. He lives relatively locally, named Paul Waters. And he came and talked to us. And it really was a fabulous evening. He told us how he did his research. And his book is actually set in Delhi. And he told us how and why he had written the book. And the book itself is intriguing because it's set in a different culture, which was really good, because not only did you get a really good murder story, actually. I mean, it wasn't perhaps the most intellectual book we'd read, but it was certainly a page-turner, and we all enjoyed it very much. So he was very interesting, giving us the background and why and how it was set and where he got his ideas from. We enjoyed him.
And when it comes to your group choosing the next book, what's that process like? And is there ever big disagreements or debates about it?
No, if we get two or three suggestions, we just have books for two or three months. We just, anyone that thinks of a book that people might like, they put it. We have a WhatsApp group for the readers, and we just put it on there. Can we think about this book or whatever? So yes, it's just very easy. We haven't had any terrible disagreements yet, but who knows.
And what would you say is the book that most gelled your club together and was the outright winner?
Oh, that's a difficult. I think The Kite Runner. Everybody loved The Kite Runner. Yeah. It's an amazing story of friendship, sacrifice. It's a stunning book. And I think everyone enjoyed that one very much. I mean, we've had, we read 1984, which was deeply depressing. It was interesting, but deeply depressing. But The Kite Runner, although it's terribly sad, the ending does redeem slightly, so you don't put it down feeling suicidal, which is great. We read The Great Gatsby, which I think most of us enjoyed a lot. So we've had a huge selection, really, of different books and authors.
There's always the debate of, was the film better than the book? Was the book better than the film? So in the example of The Great Gatsby, did you ever see the film?
Yes.
And what did you think?
And I've seen the musical, because when I was last in New York, it was on Broadway, the musical, starring the amazing Jeffrey Jordans. I mean, it was fabulous, but I think the book's better than anything else.
I think you often hear that, don't you? Yes. That the book is better than the film, better than the stage.
Yes, I also don't think that some productions, when you see it on stage or on film, quite bring out what F. Scott Fitzgerald was actually saying in that book, in that sort of slice of American life and the sheer selfishness of the moneyed class is really stunningly written by him. And I'm not sure it does quite come out in the film, but certainly didn't in the stage version. But yes, but the other one that we started with, funnily enough, was Assault Path, which also was a film, and then all the scandal came out about it. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So it was an interesting one to start with, because actually the book's pretty readable, and then I'd seen the film as well, which was a nice film. And then you find it's all fake. And so that gave us lots to discuss, the fact that it actually was made up, whereas when you read it, you thought you were reading an autobiography. So that was very interesting that she was found out, shall we say.
So before we finish on this little section, I'd like to each of you to recommend one book that perhaps isn't as well known but as it deserves to be, but is a sort of hidden gem. Is there a book that people should read but maybe aren't aware of?
Well, my choice, I mean, I think the best book I've ever read for the sheer beauty and brilliance of the writing is A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. And I think that is the most stunning book that I've ever read.
And Becky, what about yourself? Give me some hidden gems.
I think I would go back to the first one that we read in the magazine book club, which was called The Day the World Came to Town by Jim DeFede, which is an account. Again, it's non-fiction. So Jim is a journalist, and he spent some time in Gander, Newfoundland, talking to the residents about what they did during the time of 9/11. It's a very small town. When US airspace was closed, a number of jet aircraft had to land somewhere. And this is a book that shows, actually, interestingly, Rotary isn't mentioned in the book, but it is mentioned in the stage play of the same events, which is called Come From Away, which a number of people might have heard in the musical. It is a wonderful depiction of how at the darkest of times people can come together to help others and open their hearts to others. And it's probably a book that many people won't have heard of, and a place that nobody would even have thought of, because obviously our thoughts were all in New York at the time. But this is an amazing story of how people can come together to help each other. And I really, really would recommend it if you haven't read it.
Amanda, can we ask you the same question?
Yes, you can. And I guess it would be really remiss of me not to bring in a more recent publication, which is called Polio Voices by Rotarian Dr. James Carmichael. And James has led the End Polio Now support services for Great Britain and Ireland over the past couple of years. And he has brought together, as a polio survivor himself, he has brought together the voices of other polio survivors to explain really the strength of reason as to why Rotary continues to ensure that we meet that commitment to eradicate polio from the world.
And if any thoughts on sort of any books that you recommend?
Well, of course, this year in our centenary year, one of our members did do the Rotary Club of Swindon 1926 to 2026, but it was also along with two others, so there was three that actually worked on this book. But it's a good read, and there's some wonderful stories that have been told over the years.
Should we do a quick fire round?
I think we should.
Go on then.
Yes. Well, for me, I think it's important, like this book, for every Rotarian to really know a lot about their own town and the history. Mm. And I think a lot of the way a town is based on its history and its roots and how it started. So that's an individual one to everybody.
Yeah. Let's do the quick fire then. Let me ask you, start off with them, what are you reading at the moment?
Oh, well, I can tell you what my next one is, and it's The History of Datchet. Because I discovered
Datchet?
Yes, near Windsor.
Okay.
Because I discovered that some of my ancestors came from there. So I went to the town and I managed to buy a book there, which I was very excited about.
I have to tell listeners that when Alicia comes up to the students from Cornwall, when she goes home, you tend to go on sort of this genealogy tour, don't you?
Around, oh, I do, yes.
And you don't go straight home to Newquay. You tend to sort of like, you sort of scour the fields of Wiltshire, Somerset, Dorset, etc. to find family members.
I might even go graveyard trudging on the way back, you know, just to find ancestors. Yes, it's I find that absolutely fascinating, but that's so tied into the town where you live and the history. Yeah.
Okay. Amanda, if you're marooned on a desert island, and I'm going to come around to everyone here, what one book would you take with you?
Oh, you see, I'm not really an avid reader, but I'm an avid listener. So I would need to have my podcast app here, and I would take something which would be technology-based, because that's what I love to consume, is information about technology, artificial intelligence, etc. So that's what I want to take, and currently I'm reading Rewired, so that's where I'd go.
I think that's a really interesting point, because that's what I tend to do in the car as well. I'll put an audio book or a podcast on, and that's my way of multitasking.
Yeah. Likewise.
Debbie, your desert island book?
Well, it's romance, really. It's my favourite author is Danielle Steele, and it's probably rubbish to a lot of people, but it's my go-to to get away from it all. But at this moment, I'm not reading one at the moment.
Okay.
Becky, what's your desert island book?
That's a tough one, because I've got lots that I would want to take with me. I guess I would go back to one of the ones that, again, we've read in the magazine book club, which would be A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, where at the time of the Russian Revolution, an ex-aristocrat is effectively put under house arrest in a hotel, in the Metropole Hotel. And it is an absolutely fascinating book. It is fiction, but it somebody came up to me at our district conference when I was speaking about the book club, and she said a friend of hers had read it and it literally changed her life, because it teaches us how we can actually live without a lot of the things that we think we need. And it's a marvellous book. So I'd probably take that.
And Joan, what's your desert island book or audiobook or podcast?
Well, I think I would be a bit romantic. If I was on a desert island, I think I'd want a bit of romance. And my absolutely favourite romantic historical book is Forever Amber, which we used to read under the table when we were at school. You know, we thought it was terribly racy then. It really isn't. But when we were young, we thought it was very racy indeed. But it's an amazingly wonderful story about the time of Charles II, and I think you could have a whole history lesson out of it. And apparently Catherine Windsor, who wrote it, actually researched and read 250 books about that time before she wrote it, so it's very accurate. I love it.
And I think something a bit like you said, Amanda, things have changed in the way we read because we listen now. And what I noticed as well with my son going through school is I had to learn not to say, can you get off your phone and go and do your homework? Because he'd often say, I am doing my homework. A lot of it is that base. So it's changed, hasn't it, how we read. But it's still reading and it's still the lifeblood of everything we do.
But do you think children are still reading?
I think some that do have the passion do. But what I do think is that those who don't have the passion to read, they're not really exposed to books like say, I remember having a backpack loaded with school books. You know, that doesn't seem to happen anymore.
Because, Joan, you run a book club. You do reading at a school in Northwood, don't you, in Middlesex? What do you say about youngsters today, the Generation Z generation?
Well, it's really sad that some of these children don't have a book in the house. Their parents don't read, they've never read to them, and they don't have the passion for reading because they don't realise it's fun and it's the most wonderful thing in the world. Read a wonderful book. They don't get it because no one's ever read to them. So reading is a chore, and they often come in and they're resentful and they don't want to do it. And I say to them, look, if you can read, you can do anything. And it's really hard because I'm working with children of 11 and 12, and some of them have a really poor grasp of reading. But a lot of it is not their fault because a lot of them have English as a second language. So they are struggling, really. They're not speaking English at home. And then they come into school and they're having to read in English. So it's very difficult for them. But the school is very diverse. We live in a very diverse area. And we have to overcome these problems for them because they're going to have to study in English. So we work hard with them. And very often they get it and they do well. And it gives me the most pleasure of, I think, anything I've ever done to get a child reading. I think it's a wonderful thing. And occasionally they come back and thank me, which is even more wonderful. Sometimes it's 2 years when they come back and say, oh, Mrs. Greening, I just wanted to thank you for what you did for me. And it's wonderful because they realise it's changed their life that they can read. And you can't do well in school if you can't read, can you?
So, no, and I think that's what's nice about something, Becky, something that you said is that your concept of reading was changed because you had seen it more as a chore when you were at school, but opening up the book club has really given that passion some airing, hasn't it, for you? But Amanda?
Yeah, I so resonate with what Joan was saying there in terms of getting a child to be able to read. And one of the current projects that's running across Great Britain and Ireland is Books for Homes. And this is a children's book collection and distribution project. And any Rotarian, any club, any individual member can take part in this. And it's actually giving a child, usually a younger child, it has to be said, but the opportunity to know that they can actually physically take the book and take it home, it's theirs. Often, you know, a child doesn't even have a book that they can call their own in the home. And this is addressing that problem. So, great project and totally resonate with where Joan's
I think there's quite on. A few sort of, there's Dictionaries for Life, is there? There's quite a few.
Yeah, Dictionaries for Life is obviously about literally a dictionary. So again, really solid project there. And that's been going for many years and so pleased that that's continuing. But the idea of being able to read a story and actually feel that you can be absorbed in something and you can take it at your own pace and know that it is yours to keep. I think that's a super experience for a child when they've not had that opportunity. But yeah, we certainly do Dictionaries for Life through our own Rotary Club.
Do you?
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And we actually share those books, or provide those books to the local special education needs school that we have a partnership relationship with. And those kids just love it, oh my goodness, yeah.
Do you do anything with Debbie at Swindon at all around books? And
well, we were started a project, but nobody has come back to us from the book club. So we're still working on it. Mm. Jan is in charge of that, so he will be sorting that out again, hopefully this year.
Becky, for your book club, what would you love to see in terms of the direction of the type of book you read?
I'm glad you asked the question about direction, because we're just about to start a very, very exciting chapter in the book club, in that we are in progress with our first panel discussion, which will be a podcast supported by Rotary Radio, who've been fantastic all the way through and who luckily live a short drive from me. So we're branching out to panel discussions and podcasts, and I'd also like to see us do something that Joan's mentioned they've already done in their book club, which is get an author on board as well. So I'd love to get everybody's feedback, put it in the article, have the panel discussion, and get people to say, do you have any particular questions that you'd like to put to the author? So that's not really answering your question in terms of the type of things we'll read, because they're always chosen by our readers. We have readers' recommendations. We always put it to the vote. I also put a vote on the Facebook page as well, so that people can choose or email me. But really, there's a lot of exciting things coming, and I think podcasts are a brilliant way to go.
I love that you use the modern technology of Facebook in order to do a poll on what to read next. That's a great way to include all the different methods.
I should say that, Becky, why don't you put a plug out there? Because I know you're keen to speak at district conferences and to clubs about the book club. Do you want to put a plug in there how people can contact you?
If anybody is local to me in Kent, any clubs local to me in Kent, I'm very happy to go and do an in-person talk. Otherwise, I can do it virtually. Our contact details, the Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/Rotary Book Club. And the email address is rotarygbibookclub@gmail.com. So I love hearing from everybody. So please do get in touch. And I'm very, very happy to speak to either clubs or, like you said, at district conferences. I spoke at our 1120 district conference last year, and I'm very happy to go and talk at others. Thank you.
And finally, I think every reader has one. What is the classic book, Joan, if I can start with you, that everyone tells you is wonderful, but you've never quite managed to warm to it? It didn't live up to the hype.
Oh, definitely Catch 22. the hype it's had, but when I read it, I thought it was a little disappointing.
Okay, Amanda, is there one of these for you?
Probably Codebreaker. I don't know. I just couldn't really get into it in the end. So, just is one of those things.
Debbie, a disappointing one for you?
I don't think I could think of one at the moment.
Oh, interesting. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And Becky, do you have a disappointing book that didn't live up to the hype?
I'm going to be controversial here and say Wuthering Heights, because, the characters, to me, really weren't very nice, and that was not what I was expecting at all from the book when I read it. So, yeah, not at all what I expected.
Would you believe that I have never read Harry Potter?
I haven't either.
Have you not?
No.
Nor have I.
Oh, no.
I've watched all 8 films, but yes.
None of the books. My boys love Harry Potter. Are they really into it? I mean, Becky and Joan, are you Harry Potter fans?
Yes, I like Harry Potter, and I've read all the books.
Yeah,
several times actually. I think they're great. I think she's a great writer.
Amazing. And Becky, are you a Harry Potter fan?
I've read all the books as well. I think obviously they're very long books, but I think you get into the rhythm of them. You actually feel you're part of the Hogwarts cohort when you read them. They're quite immersive, and I did enjoy them. And I've also enjoyed her Robert Galbraith books as well, the ones that I've read.
Yeah, I hear a nod and a thumbs up from Joan about Galbraith.
Oh, yes. I absolutely love these Strike books. They're amazing. Yes. I do think she has a head full of brilliant ideas. I'm very keen on her writing.
Joan, thank you very much. And so, as the studio clock begins quietly closing the chapter on another edition of Rotary Unscripted, rather like an increasingly impatient librarian who's noticed we've exceeded the borrowing limit by a good 15 minutes, we should probably return our microphones to the shelf and bring today's programme to a close.
That was the pun type thing I was referring to, Dave. We've survived it once again. But to Amanda, Debbie, Becky and Joan, thank you so much for being our guests on Rotary Unscripted. And thanks to Swindon 105.5 as ever for hosting us once again. And we'll be back in September for another edition of Rotary Unscripted. And among our guests will be former Rotary International Director Eve Conway. And she'll be reflecting on her recent fact-finding visit to Zambia. She went there to see what Rotary's work is like in tackling malaria firsthand.
And that happens to be the September theme for Rotary Magazine. We'll also be meeting Sylvia Whitlock, the American Rotarian whose determination helped pave the way for women to join Rotary in 1987. It's a remarkable story. Genuinely, do listen out for this. It's one that changed Rotary forever, and it's one that we're looking forward to sharing with you. Just to say that we've got some great guests later on this year. I've heard from the former Rotary International President, Jennifer Jones, today, and she's keen to come on the podcast, and I think we're going to line her up for December, so look out for that. Jennifer is the Chair of Trustees for the Rotary Foundation, and we're also lining up Rotary International President Yinka Babalola to join the podcast, and we'll be confirming dates shortly.
So much to look forward to, and game changers, life changers, it continues. So until next time, enjoy the rest of your day, wherever you're listening.
On a desert island, maybe.
On a desert island with your podcast, your book, and we look forward to chatting to you again soon on another edition of Rotary Unscripted.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Unscripted, the official podcast for Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland. If you'd like to find out more about Rotary or join us, visit rotarygbi.org. You can also read more stories in the Rotary magazine at magazine.rotarygbi.org. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then why not leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps to spread the word. And we'd love you to share this podcast with friends, family and colleagues, inside and outside of Rotary. You can also email comments or suggestions to editor@rotarygbi.org. This podcast has been recorded at the studios of Swindon 105.5.